Well, good morning. This is Ann Goldine, and welcome to Your Health. My guest today is nutritionist and herbalist Vicki McAfee. She is the owner of Gypsy's Whimsy in Astoria, and we're going to talk about herbs, the resurgence of interest in herbs, and how that interest has now entered mainstream of healthcare options. Good morning, Vicki.
Good morning.
Okay, so there's been this long process of sort of forwards and backs and missteps and sidesteps and, oh, that's stupid. Oh, that's great. To where lots of doctors are recommending things that 20 years ago they would have said, no way in hell.
Even 5 years ago, with some doctors, not all of them, but it really hasn't been that many years ago since herbalists were actually thrown in jail for practicing medicine just because of they would serve an herbal tea to someone. It's crazy. It's really come a long way. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, herbalism is the oldest form of medicine. It's been in continual use throughout the world since prehistoric times. In fact, in an archaeological dig in Iraq, a 60,000-year-old Neanderthal burial site was discovered that contained seven plants that are still used today. Some of them, marshmallow, yarrow, ephedra, which is, banned now. But six of the plants that they found were local to that region, and one wasn't anywhere from that area. And so that makes you wonder, okay, so if they were just picking beautiful flowers to put on a grave, then why did this one flowering plant come from somewhere else? So mm-hmm. it's really interesting,
Well, obviously people would travel around, hunt and gather, and they knew the medicinal properties on some level of, this one would help you with your stomach ache, this one would help you get pregnant or prevent pregnancy,
right,
or whatever it was, get rid of a headache, and they would put it, store it up. They would know when it would be peak. They would pick it, store it, dry it, mm-hmm. and then use it later.
Right, and most of the doctors, throughout the ages were the herbalists, and and then, as when things like heavy metals came into play, in the last couple of centuries, for example, silver for infections. But the heavy metals were back in the turn of the last century, a lot of things like lobelia and a lot of herbs that in a high dose will make you purge and vomit, and so that was the healing modality, the leeches and everything of the day, and there were a lot of doctors in America that were discouraged because they were just killing, they weren't helping anyone, they were killing their patients, and they started noticing, or they had noticed, that the American Indians in the area had perfect teeth and perfect health, and they were beautiful, and so there's a bunch of doctors at the time that decided to quit being regular doctors, and they called themselves the Eclectics. And so what they did is they went out and they learned from the Native American Indians and from the animals, watching what the animals ate when the animals were sick and everything. And they started learning herbalism that way. And the incredible thing is that everything that they did was written down. And so we've got all of this, the scientists and everybody are saying all the herbs that we're using today, we have no scientific validation that they work. Well, all you have to do is get into the Eclectic journals, and which is all out there for everyone to read, and you can read how they used them, what doses, what happened, and so there's plenty of what I would call scientific information.
Well, over the last 10 years, the NIH has been funding huge herbal studies in a variety of areas. And some of the studies have been not the way I would set them up, but some of them have been pretty amazing. They, you know, pick a problem and pick an herbal solution and then test it.
Yes.
And some of them they haven't done right. Like in the echinacea study, they gave echinacea once a day and said, oh, it doesn't help for colds. And people that know that that's not the way you use echinacea.
Right. There's another study with echinacea, really popular study that they said, well, it works, but it doesn't work after 2 weeks. Well, the study lasted 2 weeks. It's so ridiculous, you know.
So how can you say, can you say if you didn't test it? You only know what you test.
Right.
So, any test that's that short probably doesn't have a lot of validity. And that's a whole other thing is when you look at research, you have to really look at the design of the study, compare how whatever it is that's being tested was used versus the known use or the accepted uses, and do they vary? And then if their results are bad, maybe it's because they weren't used in accordance with popular usage.
Right. Plus, you also have to look at who's doing the studies. That's really important. But the echinacea, different parts of different species are used. And so if you took the echinacea angustifolia and use the flowering heads, it's not going to be anywhere as medicinal as the roots. But if you get echinacea pallida and you use the stems and leaves, they're way more potent than the roots of that plant. So it makes a difference. It's really important, but
so you need to know what you're using and what part you should be using.
Yeah. You also need to, one thing you need to know is the source of the herbs, or at least if you're going to buy an encapsulated product, for example, make sure that you either know or the person that you get it from knows where that person got their content for the capsules. With an herb, once it's ground up, the longer it sits, the more it becomes inert. So really, really super large companies kind of frighten me in a way, because of I don't know how long that herb has been ground up and how long it before they ever put it in a capsule and how long that capsule was before they ever put it, you know, on the shelf. So
And then how long has it sat on the shelf?
Yeah. Yeah.
It could be years.
It could be years.
It could be completely inert.
Well, one thing I tell people to be really aware of is a lot of our raw materials come from China for supplements. And so when it comes from China, a reputable company will have its own lab, and it will test it out, make sure it's exactly as it is and not contaminated, and then package it up and send it. But I read not too long ago that, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I read that GNC has been bought out by China. So that means anything with a GNC label will actually be packaged and shipped from China without any testing in the United States.
No supervision.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things that we know about China is they're all about the making the buck.
Yeah.
And not quality control.
Right.
And right. They don't want to have anyone looking over their shoulder and saying, well, wait a minute, this whatever it is, herbal product or vitamin doesn't have any active ingredients. So what? It says vitamin C on it. Take it or leave it.
Well, the last vitamin C manufacturing plant in the United States closed down in the last 5 years. And so most all of the vitamin C comes from China. So you need to know when you get your vitamins, you go and you pay money for that vitamin C, that it came from a company that tested it and made sure that it was viable before they even sent it out. It's frightening, but regulations are really important, but then again, right now the FDA is one more time trying to fix it to where any herb or supplement, especially any herb that before that was not tested and has reports since 1994, has to be retested. And the problem is the companies, let's just say yarrow. Okay, so one of the herb companies goes, oh my God, okay, so I'm gonna have to test my yarrow and submit a report, and that's great, but they're trying to make pass this as a law that all herb companies will have to do their own individual report on yarrow, that you can't use the report in the scientific validation from another company. So this is just something that...
And that makes it prohibitive for small companies.
It's terrible. Yeah, so still fighting, and I'm sure everything will be fine. But you know, people just need to be aware. Just don't pop a pill and, you know, think it's going to be the miracle thing. Be aware. And wildcrafted herbs, for example, an ethical wildcrafter will make sure that not only is it they're harvesting in a place that's far away from any kind of pollution or roads or things like that, but also make sure that they're not taking some animals' food. And so if the stand of plants that you want have been eaten on quite a bit, then you need to go somewhere else. And so that's an ethical wildcrafter. I know that back in the 70s when echinacea started becoming, or 80s, I'm sorry, when echinacea started becoming so popular, you could drive through the Ozarks and it was so beautiful because there would be echinacea everywhere. And I remember about 3 years after echinacea became really marketed, then we'd be driving through the Ozarks and it was all gone. So you have to, you know, so, and you know, herbs, it's wonderful. The good thing is there's organizations that are actually checking out the herbs that come from different countries to make sure that they're not being over harvested. And because of that's what happened with our ginseng and our golden seal in the States, is it all because it big money, so it all got over harvested. So at least there's checks and balances in the herb world, which is wonderful.
That is good. Yeah, we don't want to destroy our own. Right. Yeah. Take the last surgeon and then.
Yeah.
And then, oh, gee, now we don't have any more. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how doctors fit into this or sometimes fit into this. My guest is Vicki McAfee, herbalist and nutritionist. And you're listening to Your Health. We'll be right back. We're back. You're listening to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldin, and I'm with herbalist and nutritionist Vicki McAfee. We're talking about herbs. So let's go back to the beginning of the resurgence with herbs.
Right. My mother always wanted everything that was super modern, and so I did not grow up with any herbs in the house. But she lived on a farm with 11 brothers and sisters. They were cotton pickers in Arkansas, and her mother would make a black salve because they would get skin cancer, you know, or what we would think of as skin cancer. And so her mother would go out to the garden and pick the herbs and make the salve, and it would all go away. And so my mother thought that that was very, very old-fashioned, so we didn't grow up with herbs. In the early 70s, there, if you remember, there was a get back to the land movement.
I was in on it.
Yeah. And back to nature, grow your own food.
Right.
And so a lot of the herbalists today that are teaching and are really well respected, they're the ones that started this movement back then. And back then, the herb books were few and far between. Most of them were for the farm and stable. So the herbalists started experimenting on themselves, and everything that they've learned, they've put into practice. And so it was a resurgence. And the herbalists, they're still teaching, and it's wonderful. And it was just a handful, and then it grew to about 25 of them, and now they're scattered all over. And
well, of course, in curriculum of naturopathic colleges and acupuncture colleges, and also in chiropractic colleges, there are classes in plant medicine and the physical properties, the physiologic properties of plants, and how to use them.
Right.
And so there are doctors being educated in the United States on plants every day.
Every day. It's wonderful. The difference between the herb school that I went to, which was a 3-year study course, and a naturopathic college is we mostly focused on herbs and nutrition, to where they have such a rainbow of different things that they're
taught. Just one little part.
Right.
Or a smaller part. Actually, it's a pretty big section of the plant classes. They
right.
have to learn a ton.
Right.
But it's still only a part of the 4 years. And the same thing with acupuncturists.
Right. It's great.
And I don't really remember the chiropractic part because it was too long ago, and I don't know what they teach now. But it was certainly a part of our training.
Well, I've been in town now for 12 years, and I've had the shop for 10. And I have, in the last, about 5 years ago, it was the very first doctor referred someone over to me because someone said, I'm not going to take that pharmaceutical. So they referred over to me, and which was great. And now I've got about five doctors that send people over, a couple of vets. And so it's...
And what are the kinds of things that they send people for?
Well, the vets will send them over for CoQ10 and Hawthorn for the heart, for their puppy dogs and kitties. And remarkable, incredible things I've seen.
So for dogs, do you do it in tincture form? I mean, can they tolerate that, or do they like more like tea?
With the tincture, you've got to dilute it way down. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's capsules. There's capsules work, and you just sprinkle it on, put it in, mix it in with their food.
Oh, you open it up rather than try to sneak the capsule into their food and try to get them to swallow it?
Yeah. But there's one doctor in particular that has been sending people in for tincture of comfrey. And at first I was going, what in the world is going on? Because of herbalists use comfrey for its nickname is nip bone, so we use it for broken bones. Mm-hmm. The thing with comfrey is that it at stages of the plant, it's got really high amounts of pyrrolizidine alkaloids, and the PAs are toxic to the liver, which is something we never knew until we started doing research and everything. But herbalists long ago would either wrap the bones, the broken bones, in the leaves. If they had ulcers and sore and sprains and different things on their body, then they would
make an application.
Well, they'd make a poultice out of the raw root. And so, obviously, I had no idea that this somehow or other helps with pain. So this one doctor has been sending people in for, I've got a PA-free comfrey. Well, it's one part per million, which is pretty much PA-free comfrey, and using it in just spot doses for carpal tunnel, for hip pain, for leg pain, for nerve pain.
So you take it as a tincture?
As a tincture topically.
Oh, you don't drink it?
No, topically.
Oh, so you put it on where the owie is?
Yes, it's amazing. And so I learned something from a doctor. I loved it,
Cool.
But I have quite a
few. No, you're not going to become addicted.
No.
No side effects. You're not going to get a DUI. That sounds awesome.
He will tell them, before I give you a steroid shot, why don't you try this?
Now, this is for humans, not for dogs.
For humans, yeah.
Well, but obviously you could rub it on a dog.
You could. Okay. And if they lick it, it's okay because it's
PA free. Right. Yeah. Okay. So what other things are you getting referrals for? Like humans for heart things?
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of things. I think one of the main things nowadays is insomnia. So, and the thing about that is you can't just go, well, here, take this. There's so many different types of insomnia. There's nocturnal insomnia where your blood sugar drops and it wakes you up. There's just so many different things when they do come in, when someone comes in, I'll ask them a lot of different questions to try to pinpoint what it is, because of maybe they don't need a pill. Maybe they just need to change their diet a little bit. It's just amazing, you know?
So, right. Yeah. Not having that French fries and hamburger for dinner, so their blood sugar's not in the toilet when they go to bed.
Right. You know, one thing about it, the herbalism, since I was telling you a little earlier during the break, that that herbalists are all over the world are sharing their information with each other, whether it's Ayurvedic or Chinese. And so there's this worldwide herbal connection that's happening. But what I would like to see is a connection with complementary and alternative and a regular medical all come together. And when I lived in Boulder, Colorado, there's a town about 15 miles away called Longmont. And at that time, I was getting ready to move here. Well, they had an herbalist on staff at the hospital, and they were getting ready to add two more. So they asked me if I wanted to come and check it out. But I was moving, so I don't know if they have one or three on staff right now. But this hospital, actually, it's a regular hospital with the doctors and the nurses and the surgeons and anesthesiologists, everybody. But they also have a chiropractor, a homeopathic doctor, acupuncturist, massage therapy, herbalist, an herbal apothecary in the place. And I really feel in my heart of all hearts that this is where we're going. This is where we're...
There is, in Chicago, there is a huge cancer clinic. It's like the Cancer Something of America. And they're very similar. They have all options for healthcare in the same facility. And of course, we know that when patients are treated with the whole of what's available, they get the best care. And especially if all the doctors are actually talking to each other.
Right.
And comparing. And we used to do that here. We used to have that great meeting where all of us, regardless of discipline, would sit down together and talk about tough cases and make suggestions to each other and make referrals to each other. And the patients benefit amazingly.
It's true.
When we all put our heads together and go, oh, right, wait a minute. But if they're taking this, they surely should not take that. Or maybe we should add this over here. Why don't we tweak that over here?
In herb school, we had round table like that, and it was wonderful because there would be visiting practitioners of all kinds that would come to the round table. It's
right, wonderful. And then if everyone puts in their thought of, well, actually, from a psychological point of view, maybe we should do this. That would work great with this, but no, probably not so good with that.
Right, and also it's great to be able to tell each other what did not work.
Mm-hmm. So is there a feedback mechanism where either the doctor that's made the referral comes back to you and says, oh, that really worked well, or, you know, I think we need to tweak that because their blood pressure's not quite where I want it to be.
Now, the one with the Comfrey, he's come in several times, and he's given me other ideas, and I've given him other ideas, and so that's really wonderful. He's not in Astoria, so he makes a trip in.
Uh-huh.
But the other doctors that refer over to me, it's mostly when someone doesn't want to do a pharmaceutical.
Mm-hmm.
Then go and talk to Vicky and find something different that mm-hmm. you know that you want to take, mm-hmm. which is great.
You know, I've also gotten referrals from people who are this is ironic. This one woman was sent to me by her doctor with this bag of drugs because she wasn't sure about the herbal estrogen. She didn't want to. And so we sat down and I did the interaction checkers and I discovered that she was on multiple things that were really a problem that were giving her problems, you know,
right.
and
side effects.
Lots of side effects. And the what was ironic was the thing that she was taking on her own was perfectly fine.
Uh-huh.
But there were a lot of other things that she was having prescribed that were really a problem that we were able to figure out through using the, you know, like Medscape's interaction checker and cut down her 12 meds to something like, you know, 6 or 4, something a lot more manageable, or maybe none. I, you know, by now I don't even know if she's on any of them.
Yeah.
But it's ironic that it was this herb thing is bad.
Yeah.
But all my other, you know, the stuff I've prescribed to her, they're all good.
Yeah.
And there was way too many. And I would think that if anyone who's is taking that many things, you probably don't want to just throw some herbal thing or some, you know, nutritional thing on top of it. You probably really need to talk to someone about, are these compatible?
Exactly.
I mean, just because something is a plant doesn't mean that it's without dangers or without the possibility of interacting with, especially if you're taking it some pharmaceutical.
Oh, yeah. Or if you're taking a pharmaceutical that has to, the workings is through the liver, then you need to make sure, and the thing is, if doctors would just open up and listen to their patients about what they're taking, then the patients wouldn't feel so afraid to tell them, because, you know, I'm so afraid to tell you I'm taking this because you're looking at me like that.
Right, you know, like so, I'm a dummy that I would even think of taking it. Oh, you're taking vitamin
C. Or roll your
C?
Eyes at me, yeah, right. You know. But it's changing, and it's, and it's changed a lot even in the last 5 years, which is wonderful.
You know, I think that people need to think that their doctor is just like their accountant and their lawyer. It's their hired professional help. And your doctor needs to know what you're taking, what you're doing. If you're having deep massage and the doctor's giving you something that, for instance, is a blood thinner,
yeah,
the massage therapist needs to know that. The doctor needs to know you're having that kind of care because they need to coordinate. Are you going to have a stroke from that
right.
care?
Yeah.
You know, is it safe for you to have that treatment?
Right.
Everybody needs to be on the same page. And certainly in the past, people were afraid to tell their doctors that they were going to a chiropractor, that they were taking vitamins. It's silly.
I know.
We all need to communicate with each other. And, you know, you probably need to give your doctor permission to talk to all the other providers you deal with so that everybody knows where we're at.
Well, the more a provider knows, the more they can help you. It's just as simple as that.
Right. And if they want to be a dodo and say nothing is good except what I have to offer, then you take it with for what it's worth.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Vicki. It's
Thanks
been a
for
blast.
Having me.
Yes, my guest has been Vicki McAfee. She's an herbalist and nutritionist, and she has a Gypsy's Whimsy in Astoria. And it's an awesome place to go for all kinds of stuff. You've been listening to Your Health. And next week, Digging the Dirt returns, and we will have a gaggle of people. I have a whole bunch of people, including Ann Pilger from the Southwester Garden Club in Seaside. They had a recent trip to the Oregon Garden. We're going to talk about that and what garden clubs do. And also Bree Bouillet, a high school senior at Astoria, and Gary Sunderland and other gardeners talking about how to get real fresh food into schools and from the farm to the school. Have a great week. We'll be back then. Do something great for your life. Mm-hmm.